Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Happy hump day, Scott Telford.
Happy hump day, and Mr. Josh Brown as well.
Hello, how are you doing? How's it going?
What the living hell is a hump day?
You obviously don't watch the news. I mean, Josh, do it when you know you're sleeping on a Wednesday.
That's
you
true.
Know, you don't
that's
have.
That's my sleep day.
Yeah. You see, we realize you don't actually have a hump day. But what it is if you work a 5-day week, like a lot of us do, on a Wednesday, you know, that's the hump. You get over that, and then you're sort of there, and you're going to get to Mordor.
I mean, all the way to Mordor. I definitely work a 5-day week, but it's split. I'm putting the idea out there. If we can revolutionize the work week, take a Wednesday off, work the Saturday, make sure you've got a day off every 2 or 3 days.
I want 4-day weeks. That's what I want from now on.
I would love that too. I would sign that in a heartbeat. Anyway, this is the What Culture Gaming Podcast. There's absolutely nothing going on in the gaming industry right now. There's a few rumors, but there's very little in regards to blockbuster titles or anything worth talking about in regards to stories or spoilers or anything like that. So we just thought that we'd bring across a few of the questions from the Untitled Banter podcast, which is the thing that me and Jules do on a Friday, and where thankfully to all the people that follow us each week, there's a lot of questions that get sent in, and I thought we'd just bring some of them across because there's some really good talking points in here, and it gives us something really fun and lovable to talk about. So first question from them is from Brian Jackson, who says, with the prices of games increasing and the countless times a game has either been broken or unfinished at launch, what is the point of buying a game at launch anymore? Now, I did just pre-order Skyward Sword HD because I found it for £2 less on shop2.net. But where you guys are on buying stuff straight away? I mean, I'm a midnight launch man, so it's...
You are, Scott.
I'm part of the illness, to be honest.
Crazy with that. Like, you insist on getting everything at midnight, even if it's not going to be good. How are you awake? How do you ever, like, stay up? Like,
I'm looking for a Series X, mate. I've got to be up all night.
Josh, you say this, but you've discovered 2 a.m. recently. So
yeah, we've seen you online at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I've got the photographic evidence.
Hey, that was only because I was trying to platinum Mass Effect. That was an extremely...
How did it feel, though? Did it feel good getting extra hours in the day? Because I'm just...
No.
2 a.m. is the new 11 p.m., I'm just saying.
No, because I had to up my coffee dosage, which when I stopped drinking coffee made me feel worse. So it's a vicious cycle, boys, but I wish I could do it. I wish I could be on your level. Can't remember the question. I think it was about game price.
A1 games.
Yes, the whole idea of buying something straight away. Is there any point of buying a game at launch anymore when 9 times out of 10, 99% of the time, you'll be getting a worse version of that game?
I'm entirely right. That is entirely true. You know, if you get something at launch, you're getting the worst version of the game. You're getting it, you know, without major patches, you know. So if it's something like a Cyberpunk, it's not going to run well. It might have issues. You're not going to get any of the DLC bundled in. You're going to be paying more than the sale price. And you ultimately have to take the biggest risk because you're there day one. You're essentially part of the QA test as you go because, you know, these games get pushed out with shippable bugs. Mm-hmm. And the biggest fans, you know, paradoxically, are the ones who have to put up with all that stuff. However, I have said in the past that, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and tell everyone that it's better for you to get a game 2 years, you know, later when you can get it for very cheap. You can get it with all of these patches installed. You can get it maybe even with all of the DLC rolled in. It's easy for me to say that, but I'm not going to do it because I'm too much of, you know, someone who wants to be part of the conversation and gets caught up in the hype, just like everyone else. You know, companies spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on getting us invested in these titles, so we buy them day one. And while you are technically not missing anything, that is a culture that's hard to break and hard to distance yourself from when you've been, you know, a fan of these titles forever. So if you have a strong resolve and if you can wait off, I don't think, you know, taking the risk, unless it's an extremely bankable game, is necessarily the smart move. But it is the move a lot of us do. And it's the move that I'm going to continue to do and continue to be burned by. So I recognize that I'm part of this problem.
Yes. Mr. Benroy, what's your thoughts on this before I've got a slightly different angle to put on this in a second.
I'm the type of person that went to university like 3 days later because I pre-ordered the Gears 3 Xbox and couldn't then transfer it to a different store. So, you know, I delay things like that in my life. I mean, I can't talk to this. I've got my own income. I've had it for a long time now. I'm buying it day one if I want it. Like, this is the end of the day. Like, I want it. So give me what I want, as Dave Bautista once said. But at the same time, it depends who you are. Like, if you're a casual in a sense, you don't play everything all the time. We'll say, like, if you're a mum or a dad, or you just play that one thing, like,
someone whose life
is video
games. Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to, as people that were so ingrained into it, and we make money by spitting into microphones in like isolation, it's hard for us to say, but like, that Aliens game that's coming out might be rubbish. I'm getting it day one because I want xenomorphs. Like, same with like films, like, yeah, but if they come out digitally now, I'm normally going to jump on it straight away though, because I want to, films are a little bit different, but with games, like, I kind of know what I want and what I like. And I mean, I did wait, how many years was it to play Mass Effect 2? So, you know, I do wait
a long time.
Yeah, I do wait sometimes to play that sort of thing. The Witcher 3 was forever sort of thing, but that's very rare. Like, even I don't feel like I've ever really been burned, because even, I guess I lucked out, like we all did with Cyberpunk, where PS5, so it kind of ran okay. So we just...
Yeah, it was like the better version of that game. I think it's like an interesting question of responsibility, because, like, yes, you as a consumer, you should absolutely hold off if you're remotely unsure, or if your financial situation doesn't support you dropping £60 or whatever it is on a game. But I also think that, you know, I'm going to enter into a contract with a given studio. I'm going to assume the best of them, and it's on them to uphold that. And if they can't uphold that, then I'm completely within my rights to kick up a stink about it, whether or not I have a platform or not.
Oh, totally, yeah.
No, we were kicking up all sorts of stinks even before we were able to do it for like What Culture or anything. You just do, whether it's in your social circle or social media or anything. And I think that's kind of like part of the ongoing responsibility side of it too, that like, if they're gonna put something out that's unpolished or unfinished, then it's gonna get dragged for it. And that's a whole other side of it, where it's valid on the consumer side to be angry on day one. That's a whole other thing.
I've jumped in a few times, like over the past weeks, that when new things come out, like Ratchet and Return, like, I'm not, like, some games like that where if I want it, I want it, but like, some with a certain price point, I am the person who waits then, because I will play them when they come down eventually. Like, I'm waiting on them, but it's hard to imagine, because it's only really Sony exclusives that you have to do that. I feel like you have to do that for now, because like, the Xbox stuff is on Game Pass and so much stuff is going there now, and it's...
There's definitely like a relationship to hype as well. It's sort of that like, let's see for myself kind of thing. And like, the earliest access point is like a midnight launch or something, which is, I always just want to see what the thing is. Like, I'm living for these new releases, whatever they are. So I want to get in there, whether it's a tiny indie thing or something else. But that's a whole other thing, is that something like, you know, you mentioned Returnal and Ratchet, there's an assumption that they are quality products just waiting for you whenever you're ready. So it's like, you don't need to check in Cyberpunk style and see what the state of it is at midnight. Next question from G Malave. Why is Max Payne 4 not a thing yet?
Oh my God.
Max Payne 4 not a
thing? Max Payne, why, Rockstar? You have all this money, all these studios, and you're not going to make Max Payne 4 just to, you know, pop the boys, because Max Payne 3, lest we forget, made by Rockstar, it's just one of the best third-person shooters ever made, in my opinion. I love that thing. I love the way it controls. I love the tone of it. I love the humor of it.
Writing's,
I love the
story of it.
Yeah. I love Max Payne as a character. I love jumping through the air with two pistols and having to whap a shotgun off my back. It's just, if a remaster of that game came out, I know it's not Max Payne 4, if a remaster of that game came out, that would be something I'd buy day one.
Where is that? LA Noire came recently. Max Payne 1 is on the PlayStation Store, but 2 isn't, and 3 is. What are they doing?
3 is not even available on backwards compatibility.
They just killed the servers as well, so...
Yeah, all the multiplayer side of it's down. Like, there's no way to even play it. Like, it's just like you said, of all the stuff that Rockstar have, like, dove back into that were maybe a little bit more controversial at launch or whatever... Hashtag LA Noire. Why is Max? I mean, did Max Payne 3 be received worse than LA Noire? Like, I guess that's kind of the same. Like,
Max Payne 3 did well critically. It didn't sell very well, which is maybe the reason why they're hesitant to go back to it. I think it did sell less than LA Noire did overall. And it costs so much money. Like, that thing constantly got delayed.
Well,
a really troubled development. And just, they sank a lot of money into that. And it wasn't at the level that there's a more positive, I expected.
Like, aura, reputation around L.A. Noire. I mean, there must have been than there was around Max Payne 3. Because I feel like Max Payne 3 is the forgotten Max Payne. And it takes people like us to go in like, no, lads, honestly, it's really good. Like, you shouldn't have been put off by all those screenshots with bald Max in his Hawaiian shirt. That stuff's actually really well written. And that's totally justified in the game. And but it's just one of those games that most
people... The visuals to it, like, with all the sort of like... was it text over the screen? And sort of like...
Yep.
Like it was like if a year or two after Kane and Lynch 2, one of the greatest sequels of all time.
Very where, Man on Fire. Very,
where that was also had the visual effects. Like, tell you what, just bring Max Payne 4 and Kane and Lynch 3 into the same game and they could all fit together and jump on the cocaine plane.
Of all the forgotten franchises.
Half of that equation. Let's do half of that. Let's do the first half. Let's bring Max Payne 4 back in some form. But Kane and Lynch can go yeah. away. Can stay on your shelf, Ben Roy.
I think overall, like, it would be, if I would welcome a Max Payne 4, but at the same time, I do like that it's a finished trilogy. Like, I would kind of rather they just put out an HD, 4K, whatever collection just so at least they're playable, because you don't even have an access point for Max Payne 3, which is what annoys me. Because the end of Max Payne 3 is very tranquil. It has a very specific endpoint. They could do more, but, like, it's a nice endpoint. You could leave it there. I think my annoyance is that I can't just play it, like, unless I get an Xbox 360 out of it.
I think... The same with, like, say, if half of, or if there's probably more PlayStation gamers than Xbox right now, like, those people that just can't play Splinter Cell anymore. Like, but everyone else can play Back Compat, or they can buy it on the Xbox store. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I bought PS3 and I was literally playing it last night. I was like, oh, this is nice just playing this. This eases my urge for it. Like, I was thinking about getting Max Payne 3 on a PS3 because I can't find my 360 copy anymore. I don't know where that's gone. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking of just playing that again, and then I'd sort of like calm down again. That's what they're riling us up for saying. I'm like, just give us what we want.
I think
give
the availability.
Give us Kane and Lynch 3. That's what I'm saying.
Don't give us Kane and Lynch 3. I think the availability of like past titles can quell that sort of like, oh my God, where's the next one? Which like that would be my sort of annoyance with it. Next question from Tom, who says, I've just finished Final Fantasy VII Remake and was wondering if you guys think the story beats that they change will work out better in the long run than the original. Now, I picked this one to talk about because where are you guys on Final Fantasy VII Remake now? Like so long since the original? Because I've gone back through, or I've gone through the integration. Great stuff. I've replayed big chunks of Remake itself from last year. Do you guys tend to think of Final Fantasy VII Remake at all? Is it on your minds at all? Or is it just kind of, that was a hell of a thing and that felt crazy? And just where are you guys on it in general?
Yeah, sort of, you know, I kind of like compartmentalized it to last year. I really enjoyed it much more than I expected to. You know, we did a few podcasts, a few videos on it. Mm-hmm. But like my interest in the ramifications of the story, it haven't really come up. Like, I haven't jumped on this integrated business. I don't really know what happens in that to bridge it to the
madness,
sequel.
Josh Brown.
However, when the sequel does come around, I think that spark will return. I am interested to see what they do, because even as, like, you know, someone who doesn't know much about Final Fantasy, what the ending did teased me so much and sparked my imagination receptors in the old brain of mine so much that I'm fascinated about the discussions around it. I'm fascinated hearing from longtime fans like yourself and Benji, who mm-hmm. we did that initial podcast with way back last year. Mm-hmm. And then I'm excited to see, you know, how people like me and Ben Roy, who don't have this connection to it, kind of, you know, come to understand just what's going on, but also come to appreciate what they could do going forward. Like, to me, I have no idea what they're going to do, but that's why it's kind of so exciting.
Yeah, I've got thoughts too. Ben Roy, where are you at in general Final Fantasy VII Remake ephemera?
In the nicest way, it's like Square Enix can just like go over there and wait until they sort out the integrated thing so they can go on PS4 as well for some of those PS4 people that are waiting. I think I probably won't play it till if integrated is that essential. I'll play it nearer to the next one. Good, then I won't get it at all, because like,
it's like, fine. Yuffie plays really well and I'm glad it exists. And there's a little bit more story stuff that tags on to the end of Remake itself. I did a whole theory video about what it adds to that. And that's just fascinating for people like me, but I think anyone who didn't play the original wouldn't get anything else out of it.
It's the smartest remake, I think, has been done in a while, because it's something new and we all can... there's people like you, Scott, that have been there since day one and like in the Attitude Era, whereas I'm now coming in like saying, well, I can sort of be part of the conversation because we're going to go in a different direction. What if this finally ties in the spirits of Inn and it's like one big universe? And I can't wait to see how that happens. But at the same time, I think about it every now and then, but I just know it's not going to come for a while. I'm not gushing, but I'm excited.
I think it's interesting that Final Fantasy VII, the original, was this big seismic, oh my God, thing. And then 10 years later, they did all the compilation of Final Fantasy VII stuff, Advent Children and Crisis Core and Dirge of Cerberus. And then now everything is now rolling into this new main timeline. That's the thing that Integrate does, is brings in more stuff from the compilation, confirms more of those things that they said years ago they weren't going to do because it would be too confusing. But now they're just like, nope, this character's in here, this storyline's in here, let's just make everything one giant timeline, which I just had to reconcile with the fact that I'm like, yep, sure, let's just do it. I've paid £130 for that cloud figure over there, so I'm all in. I've got £130 Tifa figure on the way. I don't care.
Of course I do.
I'm going to get Aerith, I'm going to get Red 13, I'm going to get Barrett, I'm going to get Vincent, I don't care. So I was like, I'm all in. But that, to bring it all back to the question, they did very much play their Sephiroth card, which is that's meant to be the final card you play in that story, and they did that. So that whole crazy thing from the end of the remake kind of weirdly like neuters the rest of that story. So I don't know what you do, really. And that's, they bring a dude in Integrate who could be another thing to fight. It's just... it's a bit of a mess, so I'm curious how the hell...
It feels like the thing they do in comics all the time, but a bit more interesting, where it's just something a bit different, and it's got new consequences, right? And everyone knew the Sephiroth was going to be there with his one wing, so, you know, let's see what he can do now with a new bag of tricks.
Guess a second.
I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm super curious what they do. I just think that it's really interesting. Plus, Tetsuya Nomura, the original creative director, has like stepped back into a different role. So the general level of insanity that comes in at the end of the remake assumedly won't be there going forward. Anyway, next question from Sawyer, who says, currently playing through the Telltale games, The Walking Dead season finale broke me. Is there any game that had such an emotional weight in the shortest amount of time? Also, do you think Telltale games will make a resurgence again? Now, I included this because, Benroy, you've just been through them as well, I think. Do you also echo his thoughts that
played the finale yet, the fourth season. I have it downloaded. I went back to the first one last year for the first time in like a decade, mm-hmm. and then I played season two, which kind of... season two is so dark and so crushing. And like, because you lose characters in season one, right? I'm not going to say who. And then I then go to this other character, like, you're now my new surrogate sort of person that I want to love. And then they just keep doing things which is so bad. I'm like, stop it. Let's just be... why are we shouting? Why are you trying? I'll watch you bash that person's face in with a crowbar because they deserve it. But, oh, and then three.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Kind of like, you know, what? It's almost like they were just like, let's just do something totally different. And then I found myself being off.
Because whereabouts in those season rollouts did they start falling apart as a team of developers? Was that during season three?
Three, yeah, because like the end of season three, so season four, mm-hmm. I think, because season one and two are so connected. Season three's got that new art style and like a totally new sort of side story for ages. And season four apparently wraps it all up, which is going to be, I can smell it being grim as hell. But I just reminded how good they were back then. Like, I've never bothered. I tried the Game of Thrones one, didn't care for it. Mm-hmm. But for me, they draw me in, and it's just a different thing, man, where like sometimes I like just pressing a button once in a while and just like letting the story come to me.
Such a weird like point in time. Like the first, I feel like everybody played Telltale season, like Walking Dead.
Season one was immense. I loved it.
Yeah, season one was everywhere. 2012, I think, maybe 2011. Just absolutely everywhere. And then I feel like, I remember when they went under and they shared that sales graph, or people started sharing that sales graph of just the massive drop off that they were never able to replicate the sales of season one. Josh, where were you at on Telltale stuff in general? Did you pick up other stuff? Because I played season two of The Walking Dead. I played Game of Thrones. I forget what else they did, but they did quite a lot. But like, what's
Wolf
your general
thoughts?
Wolf Among Us, totally season Wolf one. But yeah, what do you think of like where they went and like could they even bring that stuff back? Because Life is Strange is doing really well now.
Yeah, I mean, like the format works. The format absolutely works. But the issue with Telltale and why they ultimately, I think, went under is because they just tried too much. Like when The Walking Dead season one came out, it was like this singular thing. And then they adapted that format so rapidly to not only other seasons of The Walking Dead, but like you said, Game of Thrones, Wolf Among Us, Batman, which I think was
Batman
good.
Was the one I couldn't think of. Batman's brilliant.
Batman's brilliant, and but it became a thing. It almost became a lottery of, is this one going to be good? Or is this going to be like crap? Is it going to have the technical issues, which they all did towards
the
end?
The game engine was terrible.
Yeah, came with the game engine. So it was almost like a lucky dip. It was just like they were throwing everything at the board, like taking on all of these different franchises. And some of them worked, some of them didn't. I only got to the end of The Walking Dead season two. I've always said I'd go back for more, but like the way that wrapped up, like they went under while they were doing the final season, and it was only through like a miracle that they managed to even finish it and deliver an ending in the first place, which doesn't give me much confidence in like the project. And they have come back now in name only. Like there is a Telltale Games that exists now. It's been revived and they're apparently working on stuff. The next season of The Wolf Among Us is coming back. But I don't know whether it's going to, you know, ever recapture the glory days of, you know, the first couple seasons of The Walking Dead, you know, like that initial burst of creativity.
I think it's like what season one like meant to the industry as well. Like we
totally,
were right in that cusp of like Gone Home was about to come out, and you had like Bioshock Infinite was on the horizon, Last of Us was being advertised. You had all this push towards narrative investment and immersion and storytelling and gaming that hadn't been done before.
I will say that season four is different. To the point where I've been told it's not like a Telltale game, it's actually a game. Like
it's a four-person squad-based loot shooter.
you actually do things like the combat's more actually actual combat rather than just putting a cursor over a zombie's face. And it's not like the list isn't just complete this, that, and that. There's like finding things in that game. So apparently season four is more of an actual experience, an actual like playable game with story in it that I've heard of. But
if they did,
I'm not looking at it because I don't want to have it spoiled yet.
Right. If they did like a Walking Dead game that was Mass Effect style, like that split of like Mass Effect 2 split of, because not 3, 3 goes too far down the action route.
Grimmest thing ever, but yeah.
You could have like lots of dialogue choices, Telltale style, you know, branching narratives, but with a nice chunky amount of gameplay in there. There's probably a way to do it. You would hope that something like the Legendary Edition kind of reignites that spark. Because playing back through all the Mass Effect games, we said this on all the podcasts, but it was very much like, oh yeah, like these games used to exist. Like there's no one doing this anymore with such a split of gameplay and story.
I will say, I think the Walking Dead train is gone. I think like we've had a big decade of just Walking Dead everywhere. Remember it was Survival Instinct with Norman Reedus on 360, that thing, and I and that cancelled game that never came to consoles but only went to PC.
What was the one where you played as Dan and Merle together? Was that
Survival Instinct? Right, okay. Yeah, and then there was that one that totally just bombed and they killed it before it came to consoles, and but had that awesome CGI trailer. And just so things happen with The Walking Dead, and things like Kirkman's now ended the books.
I thought he said he would do them until he died or something.
No, they've ended. He's done
finished
it
a few years ago, didn't he?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I dropped off after season four, so it's been a while.
Invincibles is that there. The TV show's ending with this last season, so I think it's sort of like winding down to go to sleep now. Right. And with it all like hitting Disney Plus over here, and I'm going through the graphic novels again and catching up. So I think I'm going to hit my peak again, but I don't know if the industry is ready for like the Walking Dead. I love your idea, Scott, probably with a different IP or just something fresh, but I don't think the Walking Dead carries the weight. I think it just has the TV audience now.
It definitely has that feeling of like they messed it up and it sort of took time, all the Glenn stuff and all that kind of thing. They need to come back again. But I wonder like, if they cap it off and it's all available and they can sort of, you can look at
it's
it.
It's the only one available as well. I don't think you can buy any other ones apart from the Walking Dead series.
They might look to a way to put all the seasons out like eventually. I think once you get like a holistic view on it and you can pick and choose different levels and specific specific moments and then make them into levels, make them into like character driven stuff, there's a way to do it. It feels like it deserves a way
better
game.
They're always on sale as well, so
yeah.
I don't think we actually answered the person's question there, to be honest. I think we just talked about The Walking Dead when we were actually supposed to talk about.
You're not wrong. Is there any game that had such an emotional, such an amount of emotional weight in the shortest amount of time? Which, I mean, my games that completely destroyed me are Celeste, To the Moon. To the Moon by a landslide. I mean, that game, you can do the whole thing in about 3 to 4 hours. I did that in an afternoon, and then took me the rest of the day to recover from it. And in a beautiful way, that game is absolutely stunning. I will actually cry if I keep talking about it. I adore that game so much. But do you guys have anything that comes to mind for that?
Never heard of To the Moon.
It's because it doesn't have a console release. Like, it's only on Steam. I put it on my Mac as my Mac's sputtering away. But To the Moon is the story of an old man who's passing away, and it's these two scientists who developed this technology to go into people's minds. And after they've talked to the loved ones, it's like, okay, what was this person's dying wish? And they go in and they change their memories, almost like Inception style, so that the person who's passing away gets to live, gets to believe that they did the thing that they were dreaming that they could do. It's beautiful. It's so well written. And yeah, the end of that game is a big old thing. But what were you going to say?
Josh, do you want to go first?
Oh, thank you very much, Ben. Right. We were being too courteous yet again. For me, we're talking about, like, you know, specific condensed, you know, sections or maybe entire games. Like, obviously, you know, we could talk to death about the entirety of The Last of Us. But I think if you take Last of Us Left Behind, which is just this very tight, an hour and a half experience, like, side story, it ties in with the original game, but for the bulk of it, it's the backstory of Ellie and how, you know, she got bitten and stuff, and her relationship with, I think it's Riley. Am I getting that right? It's been a while since I played it. Yeah, her relationship with Riley. And I think that packs so much emotional punch into just this really small DLC, like, arguably as much as the main game does for me. I remember playing it and just being absolutely blown away that they managed to do so much in such a small amount of time. So that is definitely something I want to shout out. And just very quickly, all of the game, but specifically the opening of Firewatch, which I won't necessarily spoil, but this is just, it's all text. Like, you don't see anything. And it runs you through the entirety of this specific relationship that of the character that you're about to take control of. It's essentially just like this prologue of the entire game to come, setting it all up. And it's all through text, all through some specific choices, dialogue choices you make. And it's just so beautiful and touching and heartbreaking.
It's the music as well. Like, it's such an effective thing. Just pieces of text on a blurry sort of background telling you what this guy went through, what this relationship went through, and with this really touching piece of music. And you occasionally, you don't really get choices. You just button through it. It's like, okay, this happened, continue. Like, okay, accept this, keep going. That game's intro is insane. Benroy, do you have a devastating thing you want to throw in?
Just like when I'm trying to save a little mountain town, crawling inside of Mr. Slave and stopping that. No, I just had to, I like the tone of voice. I was gonna cry for a second, but no.
Man's been playing South Park. That's what this is.
Brilliant. Jesus Christ.
That's me.
The beginning of The Last of Us Part 2, I think I messaged you both when I finished the beginning part, and I was like, I just destroyed. Last of Us Part 1 almost ruined me when I thought a certain character might get hurt. The Walking Dead. Just the ones we talk about, like these are games that have caused me to have liquid come out of my face. So there you go. There's probably that, really. And just whenever I have to try and save someone, like, Journey hit me in a weird way as well. Okay. But
you should check out, I mean, me and Josh are trying out, there's that Sky Children of the Light is now on Switch, which is a free-to-play game. That's the follow-up to the to Journey. It's very Journey as well. It's a lot of, like, surfing down sand dunes and looking at mountains in the distance and flying and floating, and it's got that whole feel from Journey, but it's on Switch, like it was initially on mobile and stuff. But that is the follow-up to Journey from that game company that's finally on Switch. And I feel like that game was getting, like, no coverage because it was originally a mobile game. But it is like, really, really recommendable. Next question from Jage, I'm going to go with Jage. Just 100% at Assassin's Creed Valhalla. What's your thoughts on the new trilogy overall, that being Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla, and the rumors of a new game? Now, the rumors are that it's going to be a selection of islands coming next year, because this year's Assassin's Creed that was going to be a standalone from Ubisoft Sofia has now been rolled into Valhalla as DLC, and that next year's Assassin's Creed will be a selection of islands in Europe, if that's even true. What do you guys think, though, of that switch in direction? Like, did you guys used to like Assassin's Creed over the years? Like, because it's weird. I feel like when I think back on Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla, they're almost the exact same game.
It's the franchise that, like, I can skip guilt-free. Like, even though we do this for a job, like, it's
Didn't
the
you
one
do the
that I just... No, it never used to be the case. I used to get them every single year. It used to be a Christmas tradition.
I still do, and then game. Just barely play them. But yeah.
It was the game I asked for every single year would be to get Assassin's Creed, and I'd play it Christmas morning. And then one day that just stopped because suddenly they stopped feeling like, you know, these important drops. And I know people still love them, and I know people still get a lot out of them. And I love that. I respect that. I like that it has this audience still. You know, Valhalla was like the most successful Assassin's Creed to date or something mad like that. But for me personally, there's so much to them that inevitably every single time I jump into one, and admittedly I skipped Origins, I eventually got around to playing a little bit of Odyssey, and then I played through all of Valhalla. Like, it's just, there's so much of it, and I played 80 hours of Valhalla and can barely remember any of it. I know, right. I had a good time, but I can't remember it. It's
like a night out trying to remember when you're hungover from it. I know I had a good time, yeah, but I don't even know what that was.
It's very much like that, very much a night out, very much, you know, ordering a giant takeaway and devouring it all. I had a good time while I was doing it, but afterwards it just doesn't leave an impact on me. I'm not here, you know. Even this question, I don't know what the next Assassin's Creed is going to be, and I won't care until it's really announced. You know, I'd love to talk about like potential settings and stuff, but when it comes to mechanics, when it comes to focus, it's almost like until it's right there in my face, it's not a franchise I even think about really.
Fair. Benroy, were you an Assassin's Creed fan over the years?
I've got an anecdote for you here. So there was once upon a time, was it 2007 when Assassin's Creed came out and Mass Effect came out the same year?
Yes. But yeah, let's go.
Rewind back to that time, you know, the 2010s were not there yet. I was still didn't really have an income. I had the choice between Mass Effect or Assassin's Creed. I picked neither. Mass Effect. then traded Mass Effect to my friend for Legends of WrestleMania. Tried Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. Didn't like it. Never played one since.
This is your villain origin story.
I just can't even. To put it in other words, I'm sorry. I ain't got nothing.
To be fair, I wonder if, because a lot of people did bounce. I remember when Assassin's Creed 1 launched, and a lot of people hated how formulaic it was, how repetitive it was. It was like, you know, these are your assassinations. These are the side missions. Repeat for like 20 hours. And I actually really liked Assassin's Creed 1. It's one of the only Assassin's Creed games that feels like you're assassinating someone. Pick a target and figure out a way to kill them. But I wonder if you might actually like the new stuff more, because it's more action focused. It's more streamlined. Like, they got away from the rigidness of the older ones.
I'm not shooting on the Ubisoft open world, because I went back to Wildlands and I loved it. I just loved going around in a helicopter, things blowing up around me, and just quickly doing the mission and getting out of there. I love that wacky sort of open world stuff. But for me, I just, why do I want to jump in now, or do I want to, you know?
Well, the thing that goes alongside
now, time's more of a currency than anything for me.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that the average length of these new ones is like 200 hours. So it's like, that's what puts... I finished Origins, I didn't finish Odyssey, and I haven't finished Valhalla. But I did look into all the cutscene stuff, because Valhalla has mad stuff in the cutscenes towards the end, where they bring it back and tie it back into where the story was across the 2000s. But I feel like no one got there. Otherwise, way more people would be talking about it. Like the Pope moment from Assassin's Creed 2 was a big old talking point. Or the Minerva moment, let's say, that comes after it. But yeah, apparently the rumor that goes alongside the multiple islands European setting is that it's going to be a major departure for Assassin's Creed. So I kind of wonder if they're doing something new anyway.
Maybe these games show two modes. The all you can eat until you're dead sort of version, or the narrative version where you're just doing the narrative.
I would take that. Give me a couple hour narrative one. Love
like
that.
I just played Mafia Definitive Edition recently, and like, you can just skip the drive-in if you want, and you just go and do the missions. The open world's there, but just go away at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yes, I think next question from Adam, who says, there's an upcoming low-budget game called Death Ground, which is basically Alien Isolation, but with dinosaurs. Now, I checked out a little bit of footage of this. It is literally Alien Isolation with dinosaurs, but it is quite low-budget. It's a cool idea, though, because I, just to throw my side of this in here, I don't think the industry has anywhere near enough dinosaur games. Like, there's just, where are they?
Coming. There's that Ark Survival game.
There's Ark Survival, there's Jurassic Evolution, and that's about it.
Like, there's one on...
Where are they?
Xbox that was on Game Pass, but it's so early access. It's like walking around.
It was Turok in 2006. It was Turok in Jungles. But anyway, Adam says, do you think the gaming world is needing a AAA dinosaur game to throw into the mix? If so, would love to hear what ideas you have. Yes, I think so. And just let me play as dinosaurs. Let me be a dinosaur hunter. Let me be Turok again. I like the 2006 one. Put that out.
I like the 2006 one. It had really good bow and arrow combat, and it had a revolutionary feature for the time. When you moved through the grass would move. That blew my mind back in the day.
I tell you what, right? In the 2006 one, there was one bit where I was facing off against some dinosaur, like a velociraptor type, charging at me. And I was with one of my friends sitting next to me who was like, oh, you're effed because that thing's going to charge at you. And I fired a bow and arrow at it. And there was a whole animation reserved for that dinosaur being shot with the arrow, falling to the ground and skidding all the way towards me, to which I then like butchered it with the knife and took my arrow back out. Moment of the year, but no one cared because that game was buried back in 2006. But it was like,
you know,
in Men in Black when they shoot the spaceship and it slides all the way to the, I was like, I'm living that moment. It was a good time.
Could you do like a Monster Hunter style thing? But with just dinosaurs, big dinosaurs.
That's hilarious.
Take down dinosaurs.
That's hilarious that Monster Hunter fan me didn't even think of that. It's because I don't even think of them. I don't think of them as monsters, as dinosaurs. I think of them as like creatures and weird, like, you know, supernatural stuff. Anyway.
We're all of the age where dinosaurs were like my life when I was growing up, especially Jurassic Park. I had them painted on the wall and everything like that. It was mad. Do you remember those Jurassic Park games on the PS1?
Yes.
The dinosaur fighting game and stuff like that, and the other side scrolls that were stupidly hard to do. Yeah, I mean, we got Horizon Zero Dawn, which is basically dinosaur. Mm. I'm going to say the obvious Dino Crisis.
Where's it gone?
I feel like Capcom just waiting to the point if Resident Evil ever fails again, even though it never really has failed, but like to the point where, like, do we go for that? But Dana, give me this horror game that this, I can't remember the person who wrote the question.
Adam who said it. The game's called Deathground.
I'm excited for it. I will have a look at it now. I like Alien Isolation and I like dinosaurs and I don't want to play Ark Survival, so you know that maybe
that's my thing with Ark, is I'm like, I'm never going to get into this massive like online platform thing. But when you mentioned Resident Evil, like imagine like a Resident Evil 7 or 8 style controls, but instead of shooting zombies you're shooting velociraptors jumping up and down.
That's just done,
but in first person, I guess you could do
it. Three was first person, wasn't it?
No, three was the one they put in space where it was.
There's definitely a first person Dino Crisis, but the first Dino Crisis was the only real true sort of like top down tank controls. And then each one was changed a bit. And there's like seven of them, but we only think of the first three.
Are you not thinking of what was that? It's called like Dino Challenge or something. There was like a light gun one that was like a first person.
I'll shout out Avalanche Reviews. He did like the whole retrospective on the series. Okay. And one of them was a first person, but not like Resident Evil 7, because obviously it was like back when things weren't refined.
It wasn't Resident Evil Dead Aim. Either way, there's not been dinosaur based. There's not been enough dinosaur stuff.
But you're right, Scott. We need that. We need that game.
We do need that. With that being the clarion call to end the podcast, more dinosaur stuff, please, whoever can hear our collective voices. Because for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. Thanks to everybody for sending in their questions from the last few weeks that I managed to bring across into this podcast. And thank you all very much for listening. For now, like I said, it's been a podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye. Happy hump day.
And Ben Roy Turner.
Life will find a way. Goodbye.
Happy hump day and goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.